This is teaching number SPM 200 from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 34.
Moses is passing off the scene. Ends a song that he's taught to the nation of Israel, blesses the 12 tribes. And then in chapter 33, he ends with these words, the last words we have from him spoken to Israel. There is none like the God of Jeshurun, who rideth upon the heaven in thy help and in his excellency on the sky. The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he shall thrust out the enemy from before thee, and shall say, destroy them. Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The fountain of Jacob shall be upon the land of grain and wine. Also his heavens shall drop down dew. Happy art thou, O Israel, and who is like unto thee, a people saved by the Lord? The shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy excellency? Thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places. So Moses ending all that he has said to this people, remarkably. 40 years in Egypt, if you can imagine what that must have been like. The most powerful, wealthiest man in the world, commander-in-chief of the Egyptian forces, in line to be Pharaoh, with all that this world has to offer, and yet inclined in his own heart to step into God's calling, knowing that in some way he would be involved with delivering Israel, and in the flesh he murders an Egyptian. 40 years then on the backside of the desert in Midian, raising sheep, raising sons. Monotony would drive me out of my mind. Interesting, the Hebrew word for desert means to speak, and how often we see God's men, God's women taken to a solitary place, some desert experience where there they can hear things from him that they don't hear in the humdrum of ordinary life. And then 40 years leading the children of Israel. Had seen all that the world had to offer. It's interesting, he had seen God's miraculous power, something that many pastors, many churches long to see. Pillar of fire at night, pillar of cloud by day. Thousands of tons of manna falling every day to feed between 2 and 3 million people. The parting of the Red Sea, the water coming forth from the rock at Rephidim. What incredible things he had seen. And you know, it's interesting. The cry of his heart is about to be realized here, but because with all of that, what he had cried unto God is, Lord, let me behold your glory. You know, I'm still unsatisfied. You know, I've seen everything that the world has to offer, all of its riches, all of its power, all of its wealth, all of its pleasure. I've seen church life. I've been the leader of the largest charismatic church in history, 2 to 3 million people with services 7 days a week. Miracles, signs, and wonders. And yet, Lord, behind all of that, there is something in you that I have not yet laid eyes upon. Let me see it, Father. Let me see it, Lord. Don't we often cry that? We find ourselves, Lord, let me see, Father, reveal. You know, there's a heartbeat behind all of this. There's some deeper thing in you that I haven't seen. Moses saying that, Lord, let me behold your glory. And it's interesting, God's answer. He said, I will make all of my goodness. That was his glory. I will make all of my goodness pass before thee, but no man can see my face and live. And he had passed by Moses, put him in a cleft of the rock, covered him with his hand. What was that like? Because God said to Moses, tomorrow morning, come up and I'll pass by before thee. You won't see my face. I'll put my hand on top of you. But when I pass by, you'll see my hinder parts, King James says. It's literally my afterglow. And he says to Moses, I'll meet you in the morning. I'll zoom down. When I have you hidden in a cleft in a rock, I'll put my hand over you. I'll do a flyby. And when I get past you, I'll take my hand off and you'll see my afterburners going into the distance, you know. I mean, how would you have slept that night? You know, what would you have done? I wouldn't have got a good night's sleep. I'd have been all night long. Wow, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have asked, you know, what is this, you know, just how remarkable. Well, now he's about to behold his glory. He's come to that place where God is going to say to Moses, Moses, these are your last words, these people that you have led for these 40 years. It's time to part with them. It's time to come up on Pisgah and die. And remarkably, that is the unction that he's under at this point in time. He said the last things that he has to say. He's looked at the nation of Israel and said, who is a people like unto you? Saved by your good works. No, he didn't say that. They had given him an Excedrin headache for 40 years. They had never cut him a break. He looked at him and said, who is a people like unto thee? Ornery, stubborn, rebellious, saved by the Lord. How remarkable. It tells us in verse 34, and Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah. Nebo is the top of the Pisgah range, 4,500 foot above the plains of Moab. That is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan, all of Naphtali and the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh and all the land of Judah, unto the utmost sea, and the south, and the plain of the valley of Jericho, and the city of palm trees, unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over. So what a remarkable scene. The people now quietly must be watching. There's several million. Moses, as he, this solitary figure, we're going to find out as we go on, it says that his eye is not dim and his natural forces are not abated. Literally, natural forces are not abated. The Hebrew is his moisture was not dried up. He wasn't a dried out old guy. He still had vim and vigor. He was still in the flower, you know, he's still in his manhood at 120 years old. You know, I needed glasses at 40. I went at 41 years old to get glasses, and the doctor said, I've been waiting for you, you know. 120 years old as I was in dim. Natural forces not abated. So the children of Israel are watching him as he's going up, you know, unto this mountain Pisgah, 4,500 foot. That's a long climb. We don't know how long they watched, how long they could see him. But he goes up into this solitary place, must have waved goodbye. Imagine looking out into a sea of faces, these people that he had led and that he had loved, climbing up into this mountain to die. It says that the Lord showed him all this land. Here he says, this is the land that I promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I have caused thee to see it with thine eye. Now that's important because as we get this panorama, Moses gets up into the top of Nebo, and it says there that he showed him all the land of Gilead. Now from where Moses was in Pisgah, I'll do this thinking I'm sitting your way, he looked to Gilead, which would have been to his right. Beautiful area where Reuben, Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh, those plains of Bashan and the area of Gilead. And then from Gilead to Dan, and some Bible commentators say, well, it's not the Dan of Israel, it's the Dan that nobody knows the location of, Baloney. Because he's going to show them Naphtali. They hadn't crossed over and settled the land yet. He's going to show them Ephraim. They hadn't crossed over and settled the land. They hadn't cast lots yet. And God is saying to him, I caused you to see it. Some of the distances that we're looking at here are over 100 miles. I don't care if your eye hasn't dimmed. You ain't going to stand on top of a hill and see 100 miles. God is saying to him, is causing Moses to see something that he had longed for. Not only is he seeing the geographical land, he's seeing into the future. It will be 50 years before Dan rebels and moves to the north. It will be 7 years before Naphtali and Ephraim receive their inheritances in the land. He's seeing beyond the physical. And as he looks, God shows him Gilead, the beautiful area, and then the area that would be called Dan, and Israel would be measured from Dan to Beersheba, the utmost parts, the northern borders of Israel, Dan, and then the areas of Naphtali and Ephraim, it says, and then down to Judah. I wonder what he saw when he saw Judah. I wonder if he was seeing into the future when he looked up towards Gilead. Did he see Mount Hermon? Did the Lord say, that's where the transfiguration is going to take place. You're going to show up there. I got another prophet coming. His name's Elijah. Don't worry, you'll meet him. When he sees over into the area of Judah, does he see Jerusalem? Jebus at that time, the city of the great king. I wonder if he sees, God says, see that hill, Moriah? That's where Abraham offered Isaac. And that's where I will offer my son, Golgotha. There it is. Just imagine. Now, I wonder, you know, all of us face this moment. It's part of our pilgrimage. Ephesians 4:1 says we should walk worthy of the vocation that we're called to. As sons and daughters of God, our vocation in this world is as pilgrims and sojourners and ambassadors. We're passing through. And part of our vocation is passing out to the next world, stepping through the veil. All of us will experience that. And what will our epitaph be? You know, for Moses, we can't read his tombstone. It says that his sepulcher is hidden unto this day. Nobody knows where God buried him. But we can read these last words about him, and we can see the man. We can see his relationship with God. We can see his heart. One author I read said, every man's life, no matter when he lived, no matter what his tombstone says, his life is a dash between two dates. 1912 to 1952, with the dash in between, is the life of the man buried under that tombstone. What will your tombstone say? One author said he read a tombstone that said, nobody ever cuts me a break. James Dobson said, his mother used to say, on my tombstone it's going to say, see, I told you I was sick. Because nobody believes a mom. Interesting to see tombstones. I've, you know, have an opportunity to visit graveyards in Yugoslavia and Israel and Austria and different places. Just interesting to see the things that are carved there and the things that are written, that are said there. How quickly life passes by. Moses is 120 years old. Interesting. Isaiah would say to this, the voice said, cry. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, because the Spirit of the Lord bloweth upon it. Surely the people is grass. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. James picks up much the same words, that how quickly life passes away. Let the brother of low degree be exalted, and let the brother that's wealthy be humbled, because as the flower of the grass, the fashion of it fadeth, and the grace thereof it fadeth, it says, so will the rich man fade away in his ways. And that life is like that. James tells us that life is like a dream, that it passes away. Here's Moses at 120 years old. I just think how quickly it's gone. I can't believe that I'm as old as I am. If I run or do something, then I believe it for a little while, and I feel it. But my mind has not accepted it. I still think I can do things. I'm just trapped in this body, that's all. God shows him this incredible view. What will he show you? What have you longed for? And I look at this, I think, here's Moses. What he had longed for was to cross that Jordan River and to go into the land. What had broken his heart is that God had one relationship with Moses, which was a relationship under God's government, where Moses was his representative, and in that capacity, he hadn't sanctified God there in Numbers chapter 20, but he struck the rock twice, and he called the people rebels, and God said, because you haven't sanctified me in the hearts of the people, you're not going to pass over Jordan. And he had that relationship with God, and yet he had another relationship with God, where God was his friend, where God was intimate with him, with God. God spoke with him, and God led him. And somehow I think that all that Moses longs for, at the end of his life he hears Israel's going to go a-whoring after other gods. They're going to turn away, and this whole plan's going to fail. And I'm going to drive them among the nations of the world. But in the latter days, I'm going to bring them back. And somehow Moses, with all of these things on his heart, I think the Lord takes him up on Nebo, and I think as God, it says that God caused him to see all of these things. I think God let him look into the things that he had longed for his entire life. And I think, what will it be, if the Lord does that for us, as you pass, what will you see? What have you longed for? What is it that you've lived for? What is it that you've set your heart upon? If you knew today was going to be the day, you see, he's saying to Moses, come up on the Pisgah today and die. Moses is saying, I'm in great shape. My eye is not dim. My natural forces are not abated. God says, no, you just come up. Today's the day. If you knew today was the day, if you knew tonight at midnight, you're going to draw your last breath, what would have to happen between now and midnight? I think about that. I'd probably sit and talk with my wife and say, are we okay? Air's all clear here. Do you forgive me for every stupid, miserable, selfish thing I've ever done? Say yes, please. I probably have to say to my kids, I'm sorry I've been so busy. Now that's a heartbreaker. I probably have to say, I wished that I had spent more time looking into your face, listening to every word, taking this scripture and applying it to your life. But I know that I could say, I have loved you guys with all of my heart. I know I could say to my wife, I've been faithful. And I know I could look to the Lord and say, taking my best shot at it, Lord. Lots of loopholes, lots of problems, but I've taken my best shot. And if you'd have let me live a few more years, I'd have probably got traffic down. What would you do? You knew the Lord was coming tonight. What would you have to get in order? You have to get on your knees and say, Lord, I'm sorry that I've been living this way. Lord, I repent of this sin. Would you have to call somebody up and say, forgive me? Would you have to get into the light somewhere? That's where we're supposed to walk. It says here that God showed him all of this land. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes. You're not going to go over there. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, verse 5, died there in the land of Moab. Notice, according to the word of the Lord. Now, there's a time, there's a place, there's a manner. In one sense, God's sovereignty is there, and it's fixed. You know, Psalm 139, if you break down the words, it says that God knew all of our days. They were all written out before any of them were formed. You know, he would say to Zechariah and Elizabeth, you're going to bear a son. You're going to call his name John. He's going to go and prepare the way of the Lord, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, the greatest prophet born among women. He would say to Jeremiah, I knew you before you were conceived. That goes back a ways. What are you before that? Ephesians chapter 2 says that we are his workmanship, his poema. Foreordained, we're predestined to work and walk in good works that are foreordained, it says, that there is a plan for our lives. And you know, Paul says, pray for me that I might finish my course. And it's very clear, you know, at the end of his life, I've kept the faith, I've fought the fight, I've finished my course. And understanding that there is a course set out for each of us, a path, and that somewhere in that pathway, there is a time and a place and a manner that's fixed for us to pass from this world to the next world. It was that way for Elijah. Come across the Jordan. I'll stop off with my fiery chariot and pick you up. Wow. It was that way for Peter. Peter said, the Lord's been ministering to me that my time to depart is coming soon. So I'm seeking to put you in remembrance of these things as long as I'm in this tabernacle. The time is coming where I'm going to take this tent. I'm going to take down the tent, he says. Paul knew he was ready to be offered up, to be poured out. So there's a time and there's a place. You know, one side of God's sovereignty is comforting because that means we're indestructible until he's done with us. The other side of that means when we finished our course, no matter how much health food we eat, we ain't staying alive. According to the word of the Lord. But that's the way I want to go. According to the word of the Lord. And until then, nothing can happen to us. I'm just thinking of someone here in the church told me a little while ago that they lived in upstate Pennsylvania, used to swim in a quarry. It was a mine. And as the quarry went down, then shafts went off, and they hit water, and it filled up with water. And he said, we used to jump out of this boat when we were little kids, kind of scare ourselves, and we could only swim so far and then get to shore. And he said, I remember one day I jumped off, and I didn't make sure, and I started sinking. And then he said, I felt myself breathing in water and drowning. He said, and I sunk, and I went right down one of the shafts. And he said, I just felt myself sinking and sinking and sinking and sinking. And he said, all of a sudden, I came to this place where this huge arm was underneath of me. And he said, it was just peace. And he said, I looked around, and he said, this huge arm was lifting me up. And he said, here I come out of the quarry on the other side of the lake. I look over there. They're diving for me. They're dredging for me. He said, I come out of the water on the other side. And he said, the Lord just lifted me up. I started splashing out of the shore. God was not done with that guy. He told me not too long ago, he was out on a boat in the Delaware, it exploded, and he drowned again, and woke up laying on a dock on the shore. Doesn't know how he got there. That's pretty remarkable. Underneath of the everlasting arms, you know. Here's Moses, though, it's his time. God says, Moses, according to the word of the Lord, Moses died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. Now, how did he die? If he had enough strength to climb 4,500 foot, his eye was not dim, his natural forces were not abated, you know, God must have just, he must have said to the Lord, do you want me just to die standing up and fall over? Do you want me to lay down here somewhere? How are we going to do this? And the Lord must have said, no, just lay down there and then take his spirit. Interesting here, it says he died according to the word of the Lord. The Hebrew word is pheh. P-E-H, used 425 times in the Old Testament. But out of those 425 times, 341 times is translated mouth. He died according to the mouth of the Lord. Now, certainly the idea is the word of the Lord, what God spoke to him. But the ancient rabbis put in the translation here that he died at the kiss of the Lord. And it wasn't a kiss goodbye. It was a kiss hello. It was a kiss home. Welcome home. What a way to go. I think of how many times I've been at the bedside of a Christian here at church, struggling. It's a very interesting process sometimes where God lets someone hold on because the family is hoping against hope and praying until the family gets in a frame of mind where they finally say, you know, we're tired of watching them suffer. We would rather see them go than to continue to suffer. And it's almost a relinquishing, a letting go. And at that point, all you really need to say to that person sometimes is, go on, see you in the morning. We'll take care of everything here. And how often we just see that person just go, pew, and blast off. What a way to go. I hope this evening that you have a peace about that moment in your life. It is the passage that everyone makes alone. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, the believer can say, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. But no one is there with us. And you watch that person in the hospital, they come to a point where they finally sink into themselves to where they're alone, they're beyond anyone else, before that passage is made. Are you ready? This evening? You know, for the Christian, the Lord says, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. But lo, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may also be. And he tells us clearly as believers that he's gone to prepare a place for us, a mansion. In my Father's house are many mansions. Now, it's interesting. We have a book called Living with Cancer in our bookstore, written by a Christian nurse dying of cancer. And she talks about the way the Lord ministered to her and just how a baby, if a mother's pregnant with a child, and that child is in the mother's womb, and you know, at 16 weeks, they begin to hear. At 16 weeks, you can talk to that baby. I remember seeing a picture of Josh when he was only about this big. And it was a digital image, you know, from the ultrasound. And you could see the bones, they weren't even connected, they're just starting to form. And yet he's sitting in there going like this with his little hands, sitting in there. And you know, after he was born, he would lay in his crib and he would go like this, you know. And what he was already there, you know. And if you were to say to that infant, getting towards full term, you're about to make a remarkable journey. Just like talking to someone who's dying. You're going to go down through a dark tunnel, passageway, and you're going to come out into the light. That baby would say, what's light? I don't want to go. I know light. Because this baby has capacities it's never used. Never used its eyes. Maybe hearing sounds. Never used its digestive tract. And you would say, no, you have all kinds of capacities you never dreamed of. You'll come out of the light. We're going to cut your umbilical cord. That is an impossibility. I cannot live without an umbilical cord. Can't happen. Oh, yeah. You have internal systems. You have other life systems. You didn't even know about them. And right centimeters away from you right now, there's a whole different world with flowers and lights and parks and trees and streams and skies and birds and people. You know, the whole kingdom is around you that you don't even realize. And that baby would say, no, that is impossible. And you would say, no, you're gonna come into the light and you're going to take a deep breath. No, I need to breathe water. Amniotic fluid, you know, that's where I'm at. I like it dark, it's warm. No. Air. Food. Sounds. Sights. Movement. Running. Skipping. And when you come out, there's going to be people dressed in white there waiting for you. OBGYN people. Angels. Passing from this life. And your father's prepared a place for you. It's called a nursery. And yet that passage seems as impossible as the one that God tells us that we'll make, coming out into unapproachable light, coming out into a place where we are no longer hampered by all of the physical restrictions of life. No pain, no sorrow, no suffering, no death, no curse, no sorrow. Angels gathered around the throne of God. It says, He'll fashion our bodies like unto His glorious body, passing through walls and, you know, traveling no doubt at the speed of thought, something much superior than just having fun going through walls, you know. I mean, we can hardly imagine. But it's our vocation. It's our calling. There's a time, there's a place. Now, I'm asking God to be gracious to me. I'm not a hospital person. I don't want to do that, Lord. There's some people that can do that. They can, like, be in the hospital, dying of cancer, tremendous pain, and what they say is, I want to do this right. I want to be a good witness. I would be giving nurses a hard time. They'd be ready to hang me out the window. You know, they'd be, get him out of here. I wish he would die. No, I'm not, you know, Lord, that, no, let me sit on a farmhouse porch somewhere in a rocking chair and just be miserable all by myself, and that's the way it's good for me, you know. I'm not afraid of death. It's the process, you know. Sharks is not something I want. You know, I don't want to go that way, eaten by sharks. I saw a special last week on a guillotine. And they said something I always wondered. They said that after the blade comes down, the head is fully conscious for 15 seconds. So imagine that. Rolling down the... Sorry. It's me. According to the word of the Lord, time, place, manner. And he buried him. The he here is the Lord. He buried him. Notice this, in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor, but no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. Now, of course, they'd have made a big monstrosity there of a, you know, a tomb, a tourist attraction. They'd be selling shawarmas and drinks there. We're told in Jude that Michael the archangel disputed with Satan over the body of Moses. So there was something there. Was it, you know, there is a place where his physical frame was buried by the Lord himself. Not on Nebo. He died there. The Lord carried him down to some valley. He died in Nebo, the highest point of Pisgah, but is buried down in a valley in Moab. That's remarkable. A personal funeral, him and the Lord interning the body. I wonder how close it was to the place where Elijah crossed over Jordan and was taken up in a chariot of fire in the plains of Moab. I wonder. Because Moses finally gets into the land. We see him on the Mount of Transfiguration with Elijah. Moses and Elijah. Speaking to Jesus of the Exodus that he was about to accomplish. Luke says decease. The word is Exodus. And remarkably, I believe, Moses and Elijah come back on the scene. In Revelation chapter 11, the two prophets that are outside of Jerusalem. Now some say that it must be Enoch and Elijah because the Bible says it's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. Well, it's fine with me. I plan to be in the mezzanine. If it's Enoch and Elijah, I'll be happy. I think it's Moses and Elijah. See, the general rule is this. It's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. So I wouldn't live your life any other way but by that rule. There are a few exceptions. Elijah will pray for a widow's son who will be raised back to life. He will die a second time. Jesus will raise Jairus' daughter. She will die a second time. He'll raise Lazarus from the dead. He will die a second time. Raise the widow of Nain's son. He will die a second time. We'll raise Dorcas in the book of Acts. She will die a second time. The general rule is, if you look at the statistics, it's appointed unto man once to die, then the judgment. So that's the rule that I would live by. But I believe in this circumstance it's Moses and Elijah. If you look at the miracles, in Revelation chapter 11, they shut up the heaven that it rained not for 3.5 years. That's the ministry of Elijah. That's exactly what he did in the days of Ahab. They have power to turn water to blood. That's exactly what Moses did. And Moses and Elijah represent the law and the prophets. And I think when the church is gone, what an incredible testimony to the nation of Israel and to the world that they have the law and the prophets right there. And I think, how are they going to come back? Is the chariot going to drop Elijah off again? You know, that's one thing I do look for in Israel. Everybody kind of looks a little suspicious to me. Are they there now, waiting for a signal to get started? God buries him in the valley of Moab over against Beth Peor. Nobody knows of a sepulcher unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim and his natural force was not abated. Interesting. Moderation in prayer. He fasted. He ate light for the second 40 years. His great-grandfather died at 137. His grandfather died at 130, and his dad died at 137. Here's Moses being cut off in his youth. Only 120. Lord, I got at least 17 more good years in me here. It was time for him to go. And look what it says. It says, the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. Way to go. You drive him out of his mind for 40 years, and then when he dies, you cry for him for 30 days. People are just do the darndest things. You know, isn't it like that? You know, it's interesting. When you go to a funeral, at a funeral, everybody talks about who the person was. They don't really talk that much about what they did. At the funeral, it's not a what he does thing. It's a who he is thing. He was a faithful husband. He was a good father. He was, you know, things that nobody said to this person while they were alive. I would take the opportunity to you. That's one thing that always blows my mind. When I do a funeral for somebody, I think, you know, this person walked around church. I was always so busy, said hi to them passing in a hall. And now they're gone. I can't talk to them again until we get to heaven. I wish so many times. I've just taken a minute here or there to sit down and look into somebody's face and to talk to them. And if you have loved ones, you know, do that now. Say the things that need to be said to them now. I had a great time with my dad 2 years ago. On his 78th birthday, they cracked him open in Hahnemann and did a triple bypass. They're getting ready to take him to surgery, and the guy said, it's your birthday. What do you want? He said, my car keys. Funny guy. But we cried. We sat alone. And we said things to each other. You know, now if he keels over in his tomato garden, I'm not going to feel robbed. because that's what he was doing. He was out mowing the lawn, shoveling snow, 78 years old, and he mentioned to the doctor, you know, when that happens, my heart beats and I get out of breath. And the doctor said, what do you do? He said, well, I wait 5 minutes and I finish shoveling. He said, what? They put him in the cardiac care unit on a treadmill. 90 seconds, they had him in bed, all tied down. And we had a great talk. We said things to each other. We cried. I get the, you know, he just told me, you know, just that he was proud of me. And we talked and we said things we hadn't said. And I said, Dad, you taught me to be faithful to one woman, to keep tools in the house, to have a work ethic, to work, you know. You just, you were steadfast and you were faithful, and I observed your life. And just, you know, I encourage you to take the time to say those things while you have opportunity, for those of you who still do. Here's the children of Israel. They wept for Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. You know, if you lined those people up and they had one more chance, I'm sure they'd have said, you know, Mo, we gave you fits. Just sorry. I mean, you are a great leader. You know, we really do appreciate all the things you did. We're just, they wept for him for 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the Spirit and of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him. And the children of Israel hearkened unto him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. Now, this is interesting, because the grammar insinuates the Lord knew him face to face in all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh. So in all of that miraculous work and all of those incredible things, it says in all of that, God knew Moses face to face. I mean, there was something that was more remarkable to Moses than all of the signs and wonders. And he knew him face to face in all the things that he did to Pharaoh and his servants in all of his land, and in all that mighty hand, and in all the great terror Moses showed in the sight of all of Israel. How remarkable it's God saying that he knew him face to face in all of these things. I'm kind of sad to see Moses go. I don't know if the Lord's going to tarry 10 more years. That's how long it takes for us to get back when we go through the Bible. Are you ready to go? What will your last day be like? You know, I think about it sometimes. To be honest, I don't want to go right now unless we all go together. I mean, I'm ready to be raptured. Don't get me wrong. But I got 4 kids I love. I want to see them grow up, marry Christians, get involved in ministry, get on their way. Then I can go. You know? I'd love to go before the mortgage is paid. Just to... So that's the only way I'll ever get out of debt. I'm not complaining. It's just, you know. But I mean, I look around, you know, I'm ready to be raptured. I'm ready for the Lord to come. I look at what's going on in the world and I'm thinking, Lord, come and take us if that's your plan. But if there's still work here to do, Lord, I'm ready to abide. I'm ready to keep my hand to the plow if that's what there is for me. But I think in my own life, if the Lord tarries and I die, what will that moment be like? What is that transition going to be like? What will it be like in your life? Passing through the veil from one world to the next, closing your eyes in one world and opening them up in the next. Again, if you don't know Christ personally, you see, it's not a matter of religion. It's a matter of faith. The Bible says that he paid for your sins in his own blood, that he purchased a ticket at his expense that is freely yours for the asking. But if you come as a sinner and say, Lord, forgive me, cleanse me, I want to avail myself of the work you accomplished on that cross for me. Because he has. He's done it for you, and it's available. And it removes the sting of death, the Bible says. Oh, death, where is thy sting? Oh, grave, where is thy victory? We hear Job, in the midst of all of his suffering, in the midst of all of his pain, God gives him a revelation, and he said, oh, that my words were now written in a book. And he had no idea. Oh, that they were carved in a rock with a chisel. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and in the latter day he shall stand upon the earth. And after my flesh and my reins be consumed by worms, yet I shall see God for myself, with my own eyes, not another. What a remarkable image, what a remarkable picture to have in the midst of his suffering. What an incredible hope. Again, I think of Voltaire, hated Christ. Favorite saying was, curse the wretch. Said that he would single-handedly destroy the edifice that it took over 1,000 years for the 12 apostles to see set up. Told people that in 100 years the Bible would be extinct. 100 years later, his house was a distribution center for the Geneva Bible. But in his death, as he was passing, he cried, more light, more light. He screamed, more light. And he passed. The nurse who attended his death said she would never attend the death of an unbeliever again. How different that is from Moody saying, if this is death, there is no shadow here. And his son, Will Moody, saying, no, Dad, you're not dying. He said, oh, yeah. He said, I can see the children's faces, Will and Emily, his grandchildren had died. He said, this is my coronation day. And he was gone. F.B. Meyer talks about a good friend of his named Dr. Payson, a man who loved the Lord. And he stood by him as he passed into eternity. And he said, Dr. Payson said this, the celestial city is full in my view. Its glories have been upon me. Its breezes fan me. Its odors are wafted to me. Its sounds strike upon my ears. Its spirit is breathed into my heart. And he was gone. What a way to go.